Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Making this podcast, sometimes it's like shelling peas. Although I hope you don't find too many maggots your end. And today I speak to an expert on that very subject. Andrew Bird from ProVeg joins me later to discuss the best way to grow garden peas, mange tout, sugared snap, and the best cultivars for flavour and disease resistance. My thanks to Sutton Seeds of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast. What a week. The things to do just keep piling up. Last Thursday, for example, I was at Cooling's Garden Centre in Knockholt. They had it all polished and clean for delegates for the International Garden Centre Association conference. That was based in Windsor. Actually, I smiled a bit because they'd organised a Spitfire flypast. And then on Monday, we went to Clifton Nurseries in Maida Vale in North London to be briefed on the Barley Awards, that's the British Association of Landscape Industries. And then on Tuesday, it was Glee. I mean, that's the big garden trade exhibition held every autumn at the NEC in Birmingham, where there were, I think, about 500 exhibitors all showing their wares. And the retail world seeing what's new and placing orders. Thursday, then, I was off to Cambridge to see trials, and today, of course, in London. At Glee, there were over 380 new products and plants presented, and for the first time for many years, a plant actually got the best product over the whole show, a variety called Xeric Chrysanthemum Granvia Gold. It's a remarkable plant. We had it on display at Gardeners World Live. A really stunning thing. Deserves to be popular. And in the category for pots and containers, then Primer won the award for their Symphony range. Didn't surprise me because they're made from recycled tyres. I mean, that is just the job for today's mood of sustainability. Actually, if you think about it, rubber is very comfortable to handle, will stand all kinds of weather, will last pretty well indefinitely, and their particular designs have a built-in reservoir. I think they'll be very popular indeed. What I don't understand is what I call tat. So many people now seem to like to have metal and plastic ornaments all over the garden. I mean, who wants a life-size gorilla or tiger peering out at them through all of those shrubs and bushes, particularly at 250 and more a time? But there we are. There's no accounting for taste. I won't be able to make the Harrogate show this week, but I do look forward to reports from Steve and Val who are going. It looks as if R.V. Roger at Pickering are going to stage another really remarkable exhibit of apples. Marvellous season, isn't it, for those, and a good time of year to put them on display. What's new this week? Well, I can tell you there's no let up in new plants coming through, and I was very interested to see that at the Plantarium exhibition in Holland, I didn't get there, I'm afraid, but, well, not this year, the top award went to Clematis Little Lemons. It's one of the Tangutica types, and we had it at BBC Gardeners World Live and have got one pot of it at the Floral Fantasia area at the Royal Horticultural Society Gardens at Hyde Hall. The Tangutica types have small rich yellow flowers with really thick sepals, and of course they're followed by those fluffy old men's beard seed heads. But in the case of little lemons, it just flowers non-stop. A really remarkable plant. So it was nice to think that we had our finger on the ball as far as that was concerned. I've just had, too, the annual report from the charity Perennial that helps horticulturists and gardeners who fall on hard times. They've had a pretty good year by the look of things. Donations are up by 14%, and the money that they've allocated, they spent $126,000, for example, on training horticulturists, and they've helped those in difficulty to claim $1.8 million in benefits in the past year. Very good charity. Recommend it to you. And also recommend that if you hear of anybody in distress in the horticultural garden trade, then head them in direction of Perennial. They'll get some good support there. The news from the Royal Horticultural Society garden at Hyde Hall is really interesting and quite exciting for me, because it looks as if we're going to be able to extend its season. The flowers there are blooming and blooming so well, in fact, that we think we can extend the opening certainly well into October, and may even be able to take it beyond that. It's proving remarkably popular. Lots of people sitting in our big chair or on the wooden toadstools having their photograph taken. I was interested too to hear from two colleagues over from Chicago at the weekend about cut flower peonies coming from Alaska. Apparently in North America, Alaska had got quite a niche in the market for cut flower peonies because their blooms came a little late. Of course, niche markets don't survive very long in this day and age, and the Dutch have now found a way of storing cut stems in bud, which threatens the Alaskan trade. I don't know whether any of you have bought cut flower peonies, but I understand our Sainsbury's have actually imported some and offered them as a novelty. You know, Alaskan peonies must be quite a talking point if you have a bunch in the house at home. When it comes to gardening advice, we've cleared the sweet peas from Hyde Hall, and now, of course, is the time to prepare soil ready to sow in the 10th of October, the perfect time. But it is worth checking through the catalogues and ordering sweet pea seed so you've got them to hand. Potatoes need lifting too. If you've got any in ground, get them up before slugs do their worst. Just leave them on the surface for a few hours in warm weather so that the skin's dry. Pop them in paper bags, not polythene, whatever you do. Needs a paper bag or a cardboard box. And then they'll store very well in frost-free storage. Dahlias, too, are producing a lot of shoots, and it is worth disbudding a few just so that you have the one big bud at the top of each stem to make them more suitable for cutting. They'll respond to regular watering, especially in my part of the country where it's still very dry, and once every week or 10 days. When you do that watering, add a bit of fertiliser. I was asked this week to recommend things that could be sown in a veg trug now. And of course, it's the perfect time to sow salad leaves, landcress, and all of the brassica-type salad leaves sown now. You could be cutting them in 6 or 8 weeks' time. On the garden centres too, you'll see spring cabbage. It's a bit late to sow them, but if you've got some spring cabbage plants and set those out, ideally with a bit of EnviroMesh over the top, just to keep the last of the cabbage white butterflies off them, well, and pigeons too if you're in a suburban area, they'll crop pretty well in those raised beds.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Whenever I voyage out into the horticultural trade, I bump into people with experience and knowledge that puts me to shame. And just recently I went to the Pro Veg trials in Soham, Cambridge, and I met today's guest, Andrew Bird. Andrew, how are you today? How's the weather with you?
Well, very well, thank you, Peter. It's a lovely day here, a bit breezy, but we're starting to get into the autumn time, so it's still a nice, pleasant day here in Lincolnshire.
Now, you started your working life with a company called Sharps, I believe.
I did, yes. Yeah, I joined the company in 1976. I left school and went straight to the company. Very, very traditional company, and a lot of people joined the local seed business, and they had done over the years. Sharps had been very good, but they'd taken people directly from the schools over many, many years.
And so how did you get in? I mean, Sharps were very strong, weren't they, with what we call the large seeded crops, peas and beans.
That's right, yes. But they were a company that weren't involved with cereals and agricultural or cereal seeds, but very strong on the vegetable seeds, grasses and clovers, and roots and other vegetable seeds. And they also had a packeting range at that particular time, which was marketed through like local seed merchants.
So why peas especially for you?
It was chance, really. I'd done various different roles, from starting at the bottom, and the pea section at that particular time had a couple of people that had left, and an opportunity arose for me to go into that section, and I went in and have enjoyed it ever since.
And we need really to distinguish between the three types of garden peas, don't we?
Yes, there's the wrinkled seeded type, which is most of the market, and that covers also the vining market, which are vined through the mechanical machines for the freezing, and to a lesser extent these days the canning market. And Sharps were very, very big in that particular area, but they also supplied a lot of peas to the local garden shops, market, and the packeting seed trade.
But more recently, we've sort of moved from shelling peas to mange tout and sugar snap. I mean, that's quite a dramatic change to what happened traditionally.
Yes, it has. Well, really, the mange tout peas only really came onto the market probably, well, it probably is 40 years ago now, and there were some very, very tall varieties, sugar purple and sugar tall white, which are the flat-podded mange tous. They were mainly bred in the United States and were used into the garden trade into the UK. But they did get a lot of interest as a different way of eating peas, because up to then all peas were shelled. As those have developed, quite a lot were used in Central America, into the Guatemala market, where the UK supermarkets will be buying the flat-podded mange tout eat all peas from that market. But even that market has now developed in a different way, because whole pod, what we call more the sugar snap types, are now more prominent than the flat ones. And I think they are nicer as well. They're probably a little bit sweeter as well, and they've got a little bit more substance to them. And over the years, the breeding of those varieties has produced more with less stringiness in the pod, which was the first problems that they had when these types first came out.
I mean, when you snap one of those sugar snap peas, it just cracks, and the pod is really thick, isn't it?
Yes,
it would be a millimetre or two thick.
It has a thick, fleshy wall, but it's got a lovely, succulent flavour to it. And I do think for the fresh pulling market in the UK, where we're not shelling peas out, and that really is the way forward. And you've only got to go to local restaurants, and they're serving peas like that as much now as, say, dwarf beans and pole beans and things like that.
Yeah, and if, as a gardener, I wanted to grow something, I see you list sugar sprint, sugar heart, sugar lace, sugar lady. I mean, again, we're always spoilt for choice.
But
how do you make that choice? You
know, one of the best early, if you like, grounding for the seed trade in the peas that I did was in my early days at Sharps, was actually going round trial grounds and recording different varieties and actually, you know, munching my way around the trial grounds, really, because that is it's still the best way to get the flavour of the peas and understand what is required in the market. And sometimes people do that and find something that is suitable for a different market that they've not thought of before.
Yeah, you know, in your catalogue listed, I see Sugar Lace has the RHS Award of Garden Merit. So is that a pretty good place for gardeners to start?
Yes, I do like the Sugar Lace. I think it is a lovely variety, and like you say, it's more of a snap type and got a lot of flavour and it's quite fleshy as well. So it is a nice variety, that is.
And to go back to the podding kinds, which I'm afraid as an old traditionalist I still like.
Yes.
All kinds of things are being done there, aren't there, with taste and with disease resistance?
Yes, the breeding is going more down that line, but most of the breeding these days is predominantly done for the vining market, where they're going to be vined on a set day and they're all going to be ready at that particular time. Taste is important in that area, but maturity is as well. And ease of harvesting, so that they don't get a lot of trash and dirt in the sample. And so those varieties are tending to go towards the semi-leafless varieties, which is leaving behind the garden market, I think, a little bit. Because I think in a garden, you don't probably need the semi-leafless ones. There's some very, very good semi-leafless varieties, but I think some of the old leafier ones have probably just got a little bit more taste. They're a little bit more meatier as well.
Well, before we get on to that taste aspect, I mean, the semi-leafless and the leafless, if you grow them in containers, having all those tendrils is quite useful, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes, because they support, the plant supports itself, really, and so it stands up a little bit better. The problem with the old-fashioned varieties was that they flopped all over the place as the pods formed on the plant.
And I see that listed you've got a variety called Tom Thumb. That appears to have very small pods. One of the more modern semi-leafless would give us more yield, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. I mean, Tom Thumb's really been bred with that in mind, and it is one of the few new varieties with a gardener in mind, really, whereas a lot of the new material tends to be found, if it's suitable for that market, on the back of the breeding for the processing market.
Oh, so Tom Thumb was specifically bred for us gardeners?
It was, yes.
Yeah. And what about that term, a double sweet, that you mentioned?
The sweetness is all about the pea as its maturity, at its prime time. the vining trade uses a test which is called a tenderometer test, and it's the amount of sugars formed in the peas that's at the optimum time. Gradually, as the pea matures further, the sugars gradually turn to starch and to the point when then it will eventually dry out in the pod for dry harvest.
And then you have to pick those almost to the hour.
That's right. And that's the problem with, say, some of the more modern varieties that's come from the vining trade, because they are specifically bred to be mature nearly within the hour and picked at that particular time, and within a few hours they will go over and start to lose that sweetness, and the vining companies are very good on that, that they're frozen within an hour and a half of being vined into the factories.
So you're going to have a job in the garden to match that.
That is the problem a little bit, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Although you mentioned to me that a good old favourite, Onward,
yes,
you thought was still a better bet.
I still think the virtues of the variety Onward. It's, I mean, we've gone down the route of small is beautiful in lots of food, but actually, in my opinion, the pea Onward is quite a big pea when it's in the pod, but it packs a lot of flavour, it's sweet. It has a very distinctive flavour. You get less of the seed coats in it because you've got more meatier pea in there, and it's still sweet as well.
And what about Early Onward? I remember that being introduced.
Well, Early Onward came out, I'm from memory and looking through old records, I'm sure it came out just a little bit after the Onward, and it's still available, and it's the two varieties in the garden, which, you know, Early Onward obviously does exactly that. It in maturity, it will mature before the Onward pea. But it's got a very, very similar pod. It's nice big peas in the pod and very, very sweet again.
And then we have what for me is another standard Green Shaft. There's a story going that Prince Philip, as a fairly young man, trialled all kinds of peas in the Royal Gardens at Windsor, and he picked Green Shaft, and insists that Green Shaft is grown both there and at Balmoral.
Right. Well, I can understand why, because a Green Shaft is a slightly different pod to the Onward, because it's slightly curved, but it's very, very long. But whereas Onward and Early Onward, you're probably only going to get 8 peas in a pod. With Green Shaft, usually you get 10. So it's a really lovely pea, and some people would probably even use it as a show pea as well, for that matter.
Yeah. In your garden, will it be Green Shaft or Onward?
I still like the Onward. It's just got a certain flavour that I associate with it and appeals to me more. And I don't think I'm wrong in that, because around the world, Onward is still used quite extensively. The countries where they're still picking peas as fresh products, such as North Africa, they're still using them in Portugal and Finland and places like this. And the variety is grown around the world, New Zealand, still in America. So it's a variety that's been around a long, long while and stood the test of time.
Interesting, isn't it, when you think of how skilled our plant breeders are,
yeah,
that one or two of these old ones, for special reasons, just survive, yeah?
Yes, yeah. I think it was sent over to New Zealand to do production from the UK, even in the 1930s, believe it or not, and they did some disease resistance and selections of it, so that the selection we probably use today is probably slightly different from what was originally bred, but it has a little bit more disease resistance on that. It still can suffer with downy mildew a little bit, and even powdery mildew late on in the season, but it doesn't get some of the other viruses that peas from some of the varieties in the 50s did get. So New Zealand probably did do a little bit of selection work there and kept it going longer than probably some other varieties. But again, it stood the test of time, and I'm sure it's now nearly 100 years old, so that says it all, and it's still being used around the world.
Amazing. One other thing, sort of switching tack, I'm afraid, Andrew.
Yeah.
You mentioned a pest of broad beans that was rearing its head again.
Yes, the Brookid beetle, and it is a pest that is gradually moving north through Europe, and I link this down to global warming, because I'm sure if we had colder winters that it would just check its progress. And certainly, I think it was about 12 years ago, it might have even been 15 now, I lose track of time, it decimated the vining crop on broad beans that was particularly grown around the King's Lynn area. And it's marched north. One few years ago, it got to Yorkshire. I understand last year, and it was a really problem last year, but we've had some very, very hot weather conditions which enabled it to breed in its life cycle in a quicker turnaround. But I understand now it's getting to the Scottish borders, and I'm sure the Scottish growers that now grow the vining beans, vining broad beans, I should say, are beginning to get a little concerned about it.
If the gardeners autumn sow, as they will be doing in October, will they avoid it, do you think?
I think they will, yeah, because it really needs warm temperatures in that middle of summer. I mean, it attacks all Vicia faba beans, so that includes your broad beans and your field beans that's grown in the crop for dry product for the commercial markets. And as that acreage has gone up, it's obviously enabled the Brookid beetle to survive a little bit better and give it a food source.
Adam, it's fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much for giving us your time today.
That's all right.
And I must include Onward, it seems, in my seed list for next year.
I like it. I certainly Onward and Green Shaft are generally grown in my garden, certainly.
My tail piece is about begonias. I was speaking to Johan from Holland, and he reminded me that if you look at begonias, particularly the tuberous-rooted large-flowered kinds and Begonia rex, they always grow in one direction and have a flat side. Have you noticed that? And so if you want an all-round container of Begonia rex, you really need two plants and set them back-to-back. One of those quirky things that happen in nature. If you can tell me why begonias grow flat and in one direction, I'd be very interested to know. We can tell autumn is on the way too, because bulb workshops are appearing. For example, there's spring bulbs for pots at the Castle Garden Centre in Sherborne, Dorset. And there'll be lots more, I'm sure, over the next few weeks. My thanks to Sutton Seeds of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.